I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that admits to having personal preferences, but is willing, in truth, to see pretty much anything. That open-mindedness was put to the test last week as we saw three completely different films. We began by watching Old, the most recent effort by The Sixth Sense writer-director M. Night Shyamalan. Then the three of us were afforded the chance to attend a preview screening of the documentary No Ordinary Man, which opens this weekend at the Magic Lantern Theater. Finally, we'll discuss the Korean dramatic study The Woman Who Ran. Let's begin this week's show by delving into the world of the man once considered the Hitchcock of contemporary horror. That man would be, of course, M. Night Shyamalan, who earned his first fame with a little 1999 paranormal mystery titled The Sixth Sense. In the years since, Shyamalan has continued, mostly, in the same fantasy horror mystery vein with such films as Unbreakable, Signs, Lady in the Water, Split, and Glass. His latest film, succinctly titled Old, is his own adaptation of the graphic novel Sandcastle by writer Pierre Oscar Levy and illustrator Frederick Peters. In short, it involves a group of people staying at an exclusive resort who find themselves stranded on a secluded beach and growing, strangely and improbably, years older as every hour passes. No surprise, it doesn't take long before the dying begins. Shyamalan, who has always seemed to be his own biggest fan, keeps things moving well enough, even given the number of seemingly strange occurrences and an eventual resolution that feels more like something out of a Law and Order episode than a chilling big screen exploration of horror.
So I don't know if this movie is a success. And I don't know if it's a total failure either, because it has some very good scenes interspersed by some very bad scenes.
Which has become his trademark,
kind of expect that from him. And I've been saying for a long time that we're sort of in an era of artistic timidity when it comes to studio-funded movies and blockbusters. And filmmakers that work in those spaces, particularly in genre films, aren't always allowed to take the big stylistic swings that they once used to. When you think back to people like Paul Verhoeven or Brian De Palma, mm-hmm. who made these crazy, exploitative, almost operatic melodramas that were also thrillers or action films.
Yeah, we're lost more in the James Wan Saw kind of
right.
series.
And, yeah. And, you know, there's a space for that, and I like some of those movies. But I feel like Shyamalan is almost immune to that kind of timidity. Like, he gets away with things that most other filmmakers wouldn't be able to get away with, on top of the fact that he had his career crashed and burned not that long ago, yeah. and he seems to be back again, and people are going to see his movie. So he's really survived a lot of things and is almost working kind of in his own realm these days. Without getting too much into the details of the premise, because obviously with any Shyamalan film, it's best to know as little as possible when you go in, and Old is no different. But I want to address the third act reveal, which you mentioned, Dan, and which is Shyamalan's bread and butter. I mean, that was – his career was made because of the big twist at the end of The Sixth
yep.
Sense. And he's been kind of chasing that for a while now, and sometimes he pulls off a good twist, and I would say probably more often than not, he doesn't. The reveal in Old isn't that bad. When he kind of explained what was going on, I thought – okay, that makes sense. But then he keeps explaining and keeps explaining, and the third act keeps going. And I think if it had ended maybe a full 10 minutes before it actually does, I might have walked out of the movie saying, that was actually pretty good. That was pretty solid. Instead, it now feels kind of like, you know how during the production code back in the day in the 40s and 50s, you couldn't – like bad guys couldn't get away with bad behavior. They had to be punished, whether it made any yeah. sense within the context of the narrative or not. The ending of Old – and when I say ending, I mean almost the epilogue to the story, the button on the story, almost feels like it was mandated by a studio saying your original vision is too dark and cynical. And so in that yeah. sense, it kind of counteracts what I was saying at the beginning, that he is kind of operating without a net, without guidance. And then in comes an ending. It must have been his choice. But I just thought the wrap up of this was the worst thing about it, even though throughout the movie, there are these pieces of awkward dialogue and awkward line readings and awkward acting choices, and then scenes of great power and inventive visual imagination and
sights. You mean like when the tumor was removed from the woman?
For instance, or the scene involving a calcium deficiency that I thought was like almost hilarious in how insane it was. So there's good stuff in this mostly pretty mixed bag of a movie.
I know that his hallmark, I said trademark, but hallmark is this, you know, last minute reveal or this surprise ending. But I'm going to say I don't think it worked here. Okay. I really do not. I would have appreciated if that had been revealed earlier and we could have contrasted what was happening at place A and place B, because here I was getting bored with what was happening on the beach because there weren't enough sort of shocking scenes, although there were some. I agree.
Yeah, there were some.
I agree, but honestly, and then there was the whole
teens will be teens. Let's leave it at that.
Right,
okay.
Right. But I think they're also so people were supposed to age quicker, like a half an hour represented like 59 years or something.
Yeah, well, they say a whole day on the beach would be 50 years. They do.
Right.
They time
but
that
But then
out.
Some of the people – so the youngsters, of course, looked much different.
And they used different actors,
right.
Yes.
Right. But the older people, they didn't really look that much different. And I was
until
like –
until the very end, right.
And I was like, wait a minute. I can vouch for the fact that people during middle age do change, and so maybe you could have done something a little bit more with that.
It was subtle, though, and I thought the ways that they made the – especially the characters played by Gael Garcia Bernal and Vicky Creeps, I thought they did a good job of, as Dan said, near the end when they're like really old, of making them look subtly older from one scene to another. I thought the effects were good.
Okay, yeah, and maybe I'm just off base there. And then there were a couple of plot lines, like the whole plot line involving the rapper and what transpired. I mean, that
yeah.
just sort of went sideways,
especially when
in
it
a
got
variety
it,
of ways.
It, when it got conflated with Rufus Sewell's character, who is this surgeon. Maniacal person who immediately jumps to racist
assumptions
charges.
About what yeah, transpired exactly. on the beach. Yeah.
yeah.
So old, I think, in terms of the Shyamalan oeuvre itself, I think it's a miss. And as a film, you know, I just was not engaged. And I was hoping for a summer movie to have something more, especially since it was taking place on a beach and so forth and so on.
Yeah,
but
I think the idea here was a lot more clever than any of the execution. I mean, some of the execution, you talked about the one scene involving a tumor, removal of a tumor, is absolutely absurd, even in a
but
even
it's
in
still
a fantasy
riveting.
Horror. Yep. But is it as riveting as some of the scenes in The Happening, which was a bad movie, but at least some people, you see people falling off buildings and other people lying down and letting a mower run over them, or talking about the reveal, The Village, another bad movie with a bad reveal at the end. Still, there were
beautifully
affecting,
made a beautifully
there were
made
affecting
bad movie.
Scenes in
yes,
that.
Yes.
I mean, Shyamalan is a guy who can make a movie, but he seems so stuck in this. I've got to be this certain kind of filmmaker that this is my, as you use your word, Mary Pat, hallmark, that he can't do anything else. I mean, even what The Last Airbenders,
oof.
He tried to step out. And
or After Earth with
yeah,
Will
right.
Smith. Yeah,
you know.
Well, I want to defend the craft of this movie a little bit because I think we're all in agreement and I think most people who are even defenders of Shyamalan would be in agreement that he is a much better director than he is a writer. And I would like
yes.
to see him – again, this would be less control than he normally has. I would like to see him, you know, direct more scripts or co-author. And obviously he's adapting something here, which he doesn't mm-hmm. do all that often. But I want to talk about the style of the movie because I really liked the way it was made in a lot of it. The camera work in this movie I want to call out is by Mike Gelakis, who's worked on Shyamalan's last few movies, and he also shot some horror stuff like It Follows,
and
he shot Us
he
for Jordan Peele.
He keeps this film moving. The pace of the film works well.
The thing
see,
about
and
the,
I didn't think so.
See, like, I thought the camera in this movie was so expressive because at the beginning you have these sort of long, complicated tracking shots where the camera's moving back and forth and he's playing with space in the background while things are going on in the foreground, lots of kind of split diopter shots, which again made me think of Brian De Palma. And then later on when things get really chaotic, the camera's always like half an inch too close to somebody's face or off center in a way that you wouldn't normally shoot a scene this way, or it will zoom in on something seemingly inconsequential while a horrifying event is happening just off screen. So I liked the way he used the camera in this movie to create that sense of disorientation, because I don't know if his characters or dialogue pull it off quite as well.
Right, because I think that, you know, now as we're talking about it, I think the other problem that I had with the film was I wasn't engaged really with any of the characters. Mm. And that is a problem sometimes in ensemble cast movies.
There are a lot of characters too.
Right, you're right. And I think that was maybe something that pulled me out of the film as well.
Yeah, a lot of different characters, and none of them were all that interesting. I mean, the marriage that's maybe faulty. There's the surgeon who he's there with his mom and his teenage wife, and you know, and their baby toddler child. Who, let's not even get into that. It goes back to what I said about teens being teens. Yeah. There's a scene that's strange, but so I think that we have three different takes on old, but pretty much the attitude is the same. So, talking about M. Night Shyamalan's new film, Old. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the documentary No Ordinary Man and the Korean drama The Woman Who Ran. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
When you consider the future, please consider Spokane Public Radio in your estate plans. Your gift to the SBR Fund for the Future Endowment will ensure that access to real news, meaningful conversations, and great music will continue forever in our communities. One of the most impactful ways listeners can help is through planned gifts. Details are available from the business office at Spokane Public Radio, your tax accountant, attorney, or the Inovia Community Foundation. More information at SpokanePublicRadio.org/membership. And thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed M. Night Shyamalan's new film, Old. Let's now move to the documentary No Ordinary Man and the Korean import, The Woman Who Ran. Let's begin with a film that has a distinct Spokane connection. That connection involves jazz musician Billy Tipton, who died in Spokane in 1989 and was almost immediately revealed to be born a woman who for decades had lived as a man. The story broke wide, making headlines in newspapers from the Spokesman Review to pretty much every supermarket tabloid. Most of the articles and subsequent television talk shows focused on what 32 years ago was considered strange, that no one close to Tipton claimed to know the truth of the matter. What we know today, though, is that some truths are relative. And what co-directors Chase Joint and Aisling Chin Yi managed to do by interviewing a range of experts, authors, actors, and prominent members of the trans community is to provide the kind of background that not only gives some clues as to Tipton's motivations, but also shines a spotlight on a part of humanity that has for so long been forced to hide in a kind of cultural shadow.
I was intrigued by the Tipton story because when I came to interview for a job at Gonzaga here in Spokane, it was the week that Billy Tipton had died. And so I was visiting from New York, and there's this huge furor about what had transpired and so forth and so on. So I was a little puzzled by what this said and meant about the Spokane community. And granted, this was 32 years ago, so times were definitely different, and I'll focus on that a little later. But this film, rather than being a biography of Billy Tipton, really is more or less a story of what he means now in retrospect to the trans community. And so I think that the filmmakers, the documentarians, took an interesting perspective on this, because it could have been certainly more salacious. It could have been maybe more thorough in some respects about Billy Tipton himself, but rather the focus was sort of on other things. And this is the wisdom of 32 years, because they really diss Diane Middlebrook, I think, in this film. And she was the biographer. She wrote a biography of Billy Tipton. But I think it's important to note that her biography of Billy Tipton back in the day was nominated for a Lambda Literary Award. And so to get one of the Lammy nominations, it was some validation by the LGBTQ plus community at the time that this was a book worth reading. And now with the lens of hindsight, we feel differently about it. So I think that there are some really excellent features to this documentary. But let's be clear, it's not really the story of Billy Tipton, who remains an enigma, at least from my perspective, throughout.
Well, and compare this to the Anthony Bourdain doc that we reviewed recently. There you had a subject who was almost over-documented. And now we're dealing with Billy Tipton in No Ordinary Man. And I don't think there's any archival footage, film footage of Tipton anywhere in this documentary, if it exists at all. We do hear snippets of his voice on recordings that he made himself, and obviously the music that he made. But for the most part, you know, we're kind of going off of anecdotes and also, as you said, this now flawed biography that exists. And yeah, this is more of a thesis on sort of gender roles in society, about the ways that trans people have always had to navigate the world, and also about how things have changed and how things haven't really changed that much. It kind of goes into both of those issues. And I want to talk about one of the devices that's going on throughout this movie, which is we are seeing actors, all trans masculine actors, who are quote unquote auditioning to play the role of Billy Tipton in these kind of fake scenes that have been dramatized from things that happened in his life. And we have seen that device before in other movies, but I thought it was used really well here.
I agree.
Because totally. It's filling that void that we have of no archival footage. It's sort of imagining what Tipton's life would have been like, especially when he was working up the ranks in the jazz world. But it also allows these people to sort of analyze Tipton, not just as a character, but as a real historical figure, and how he would have been navigating these interactions as a person who was trans, but at a time when that was we don't have Billy Tipton around to ask how Billy Tipton would like to be identified.
Although
and
Billy
that's something
Tipton
that comes
Jr.
up.
Does appear in the movie. So,
yeah, and I think that Billy Tipton Jr. is one of the most poignant pieces of the entire moment. To your point, Nathan, I think the auditions are particularly effective when you consider Marquise Wilson, mm-hmm. who is black. It adds to the whole notion of diversity and
And his interpretations of the scenes that they've written are maybe the most poignant in a lot of ways.
Or in depth.
He finds wrinkles and subtleties in there that the other actors don't.
Right. And that was No Ordinary Man. Let's close with The Woman Who Ran. Some films feature a lot of action without much of anything of import actually happening. Korean filmmaker Hong Sang-soo forges a far different path. He makes movies in which nothing much seems to be going on, but between the lines, so to speak, Hong focuses on what he sees as life's most important issues. In the case of his latest film, The Woman Who Ran, Hong casts the actress Kim Min-hee as Gam-hee, a woman exploring her past as a means of understanding her present and perhaps as a way of figuring out her future. Separated from her possessive husband for the first time in 5 years, Gam-hee visits three friends, two intentionally, the third maybe by accident. In the process of the seemingly pedestrian meetings, which involve mostly mundane conversations, Hong poses questions. Is what Gam-hee recalls of her past the truth? Is her marriage a happy one? What will she do once the visits are over? The answer to that final one may be as obscure and unknowable as the movie she goes to see and then returns to see a second time, a movie that features a repetitive beachside scene, boats sailing in the distance, underscored by a mundane ukulele refrain. As I wrote in my review, that simple scene could be viewed as a shorthand version of the film's overall message, seeming as it does to capture a wistful sense of peace that so many of us have dreamed of on occasion in our private moments of unbridled desires and unmet expectations.
Well, this is a short film. It's only about 75 minutes long, but it's comprised of long scenes and long takes and long conversations, which is sort of the signature style of Hong. And he loves idle conversations where characters are talking about scenes seemingly mundane things, but there's a lot more going on beneath the surface. And you did sort of mention the almost kind of meta elements going on here. And let's not forget that Kim Min-hee, who is in a lot of Hong's films, is also his wife in real life. And there was sort of a scandal when they got together in the tabloids in South Korea. So I think there's an element there as she's talking about her relationship with her friends. You can't help but and we find out there about a relationship in her past at the end of the movie. We can't help but kind of put
draw
two and two
parallels
together there. Yeah. And all of this is great in theory. This feels like, I mean, this is sort of a classic art house foreign film. But I don't know. I was sort of left frustrated by this because it is – I get what he's doing here. It's the middle act of a much more complex story, and we don't get act one or three.
It took me a while to catch up here. And I think as a result of that, if you are patient, and I am usually not, then I think that this film really does have something to say. And you can sort of piece together and you can draw your own inferences.
You have
or
to do the legwork here.
Right, yes. Exactly. And
yeah,
so
it just reminded me of French films of the 70s and 80s.
Totally.
Usually featured a bunch of people sitting around a table eating and drinking.
Yep.
Nothing's going on, and yet everything is going on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Eric Rohmer, for example.
Sure.
And I think that this is the Korean version of that. I think it's all – a lot of Hong's movies are – they work on you with what you bring to them. They're there on the screen. You can make of them what you will. You can make of your own life what you will. And I think that he's a master of understated cinema, and I just happen to love understated cinema. So – at any rate, that was The Woman Who Ran, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat, Truthart, and I discuss the thriller Old and the documentary No Ordinary Man, which opens this weekend at the Magic Lantern Theater. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these obscure words from, of course, M. Night Shyamalan. Sometimes we do not do things that we wish to do, so others will not know that we wish to do them. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.